The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Chris and I are back with you on this not a short journey. But man, we're getting through it here. Walking through the language of the heart, the book, The Language of the Heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine Writings from 1944 to 1970. Chris, what do we got going on this week?
Monty, it's really good to be back after a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Running around doing family stuff. But, you know, this week we're on part three, page 251. This article was written in April 1961, and it's called "God as We Understand Him: The Dilemma of No Faith." And I'm really going to be interested in reading this. You know, Monty, just to preface what we're going to do here with this show, I want to tell you about a book I finished while I was away in New Mexico. The book is called God, the Bestseller. And I think I've probably talked about this a little bit before, but I finished the book. And the most amazing part of the book was the last chapter. The last chapter was solely devoted to Bill Wilson. And this book was written a kind of a biography about this editor for Harper's Publishing named Axman. Now, here's what I found out in that last chapter that I never knew before. One of them is Axman published some of the greatest religious writers and spiritual people of the 20th century. Some including Martin Luther King Jr., Dorothy Day, Albert Schweitzer. I mean, I could go on and on and on with a list of people that Axman, he was their editor, right?
Yeah.
And he was Bill Wilson's editor.
Really?
So the big book Alcoholics Anonymous was basically edited with Hank Parkhurst and Bill Wilson, you know, on a shoestring budget, you know, in a tiny little office.
Yeah.
But by the time the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions were written, Axman edited it and published it. Now he knew Bill Wilson wanted Works Publishing to be able to publish in perpetuity all of the Alcoholics Anonymous literature, right? So he made a special deal with Bill because he became really close friends with Bill. And Harper's basically published the books that you would find in the bookstore, and Works Publishing published them for us. And I think Works has kind of taken over the publishing. But in the beginning, it was Harper's, and it was Axman was the editor. And also the book AA Comes of Age. Also was edited by this guy Axman. Now, here's the really interesting stuff. The early experimental uses of LSD were done with Bill Wilson and Axman, his publisher, and a number of other real spiritual giants of the late 50s,
yeah,
like Hurd and Huxley. You know, you've heard these names,
yeah,
right? And they got it from, they got the stuff from Dr. Albert Hoffman. So you know, I don't want anybody to misunderstand that Bill was out, you know, partying.
Right.
This these were the spiritual giants in the United States hearing about the possible uses of this particular drug for a connection to the divine and like a shortcut to a spiritual experience. And so they got involved with it. And when they realized that this was, you know, it really wasn't going to be anything that was going to last, it, you know, it might be a shot in the arm for a short period of time, but the spiritual life is really what's going to bring someone the real benefit of a changed life. And with Bill Wilson, a recovery, you know, they abandoned that, you know, those experiments.
Sure.
But this book got into more detail than I've ever seen anywhere else. And I highly recommend it to anybody.
Wow.
This guy's a real scholar who put this thing together.
Yeah. Okay. So it's entitled God, the Bestseller.
Yes. And this guy Axman probably changed the way we think about spirituality in the 20th century just by being the guy who was publishing all these bestsellers.
Wow.
You know, so today the way America thinks about religion and spirituality has been changed because of this man. And he was really good friends with Bill Wilson. He kind of lived near him and they hung out a lot. So it's very interesting.
That's a great chunk of history. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's get to our job, what they're paying us for here, Monty. and that's to go over some of these essays in the book, Language of the Heart. So I'm going to start with God as we understand him, the dilemma of no faith. The phrase, God as we understand him, is perhaps the most important expression to be found in our whole AA vocabulary. Within the compass of these five significant words, there can be included every kind of and degree of faith, together with the positive assurance that each of us may choose his own. Scarcely less valuable to us are those supplemental expressions, a higher power, a power greater than ourselves. For all who deny or seriously doubt a deity, these frame an open door over whose threshold the unbeliever can take his first easy step into a reality hitherto unknown to him, the realm of faith. Man, I knew this article was going to be good. That is a powerful, powerful paragraph. So Bill isn't saying your higher power should be a doorknob. He's saying that maybe briefly, you know, that might be a stepping stone to a full-bodied a belief and relationship with God. Don't you think, Monty?
Yes, and I think once again, just in this first paragraph, he's reflecting the whole idea that any place is a good enough place to make a beginning, providing it makes sense to you. It's all about making a beginning, regardless of how insufficient it might be in the beginning. And I think that's what a lot of people miss, don't you, Chris?
I do.
They're in the program for years, and they're still stuck on maybe the group being, you know, God to them. And yeah, in the beginning, sure. But that's not going to suffice if you're going to delve into the areas of recovery that we're delving into.
I believe that as well, Monty. I think if you stall, like if you don't continue to seek connection and relationship with this this power greater than yourself, God, if you stall out, you can be putting your recovery and your sobriety at risk.
Yeah,
you know, I've met people in the rooms who, you know, they learned what they learned from their sponsor in the first month, and then the door was shut. You know what I mean? I don't need any more information, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna go and take meetings hostage and share you know, the same thing, you know, every week for the next 30 years and drive everybody crazy. There's people that do that. And then there's people who keep the door open. Stay open-minded and awaiting the results of new experiences and paying attention to those. And I think those are the people who have what I want.
Yes. Amen. Mm.
In AA, such breakthroughs are everyday events. They are all the more remarkable when we reflect that a working faith had once seemed an impossibility of the first magnitude to perhaps half of our present membership of 300,000. To all those doubters has come the great discovery that as soon as they could cast their main dependence upon a higher power, even upon their own AA groups, they had turned that blind corner which had always kept the open highway from their view. From this time on, assuming they tried hard to practice the rest of the AA program with a relaxed and open mind, an even deepening and broadening faith, a veritable gift, had invariably put in sometimes unexpected and often mysterious appearance. So what I would say about that paragraph is, we are to seek, and things will be revealed to us. Hasn't your recovery been a revelatory experience since day one, Monty?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door will be opened unto you. You know, but it requires that we're moving, right?
We're knocking.
We're knocking and we're seeking. We're participating, everybody. Participate.
Absolutely. We much regret that these facts of AA life are not understood by the legion of alcoholics in the world around us. Any number of them are bedeviled by the dire conviction that if ever they go near AA, they will be pressured to conform to some particular brand of faith or theology. They just don't realize that faith is never a necessity for AA membership, that sobriety can be achieved with an easily acceptable minimum of it, and that our concept of a higher power and God as we understand him afford everyone a nearly unlimited choice of spiritual belief and actions. Now, one of the things I want to backtrack a little bit to this book we talked about in the beginning of this meeting. Really, what this guy Axman, how he believed and what he thought was important in educating the public about religion and spirituality was what I would describe as experiential spirituality. Mm. So Axman and his friends, Bill Wilson and all of them, they started retreats. They put together prayer groups. They put together book study groups. They got really, really involved in a deeper dive into this spirituality. And I've said this before, my favorite definition of spirituality is an interpersonal pathway to connection with the divine.
Yes.
And it's a personal inner pathway. So we can be religious, we can not be religious, but we need this connection with God. Alcoholics are people who have a spiritual vacancy within them. Mm. There is a deep desire within the alcoholic to become connected to, in union with, this divine that a lot of times, mm-hmm, when we're drinking, we don't understand we need. But that's what I was looking for in a bottle. That's what I was looking for in a drug. I was looking for that connection, that union, Monty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I want to say this and see what you think. So we did a broadcast last week, and we were talking about God, and a person responded on the YouTube version that said, "I was with you until you got religious. AA isn't about religion." Well, it's interesting to me, people's definition of that word. First of all, I think the word religion gets a bad rap, but people have an interesting view of what that means. You know what I mean? Everything from organized religion. I don't like organized religion. What do you mean by that? I mean, you got to meet on time and you got, what do you mean by organized? And what the listener was saying was that we had turned a corner into being religious because we brought up the topic of God. And nothing could have been further from the truth in the negative connotation of the word religion. In the true connotation of the word religion, yeah. I mean, when he says be quick to see where religious people are right, I don't think he's talking about the negative connotation, do you?
You know, I'll basically say this. A lot of people show up in Alcoholics Anonymous and they're atheist or they're agnostic, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they really they take a personal interest in holding on to those beliefs. And you're welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous as an atheist or agnostic, but you're going to have a hard time with recovery if you don't deal with that spiritual vacancy.
Yeah.
So just like you're allowed in a hospital, you don't have to go into the doctor's office. You know, you're allowed in the hospital, right? We allow you in the rooms, but the healing is going to come when you see the doctor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't understand that. And they hear, you know, AA is, you know, not religious, it's spiritual, but their definitions of some of the terms are not like if I say to you, God, you know, many people are going to, something's going to pop into their head that I don't mean.
Right.
You know, when I say religion, something's going to pop into their head I don't mean. When I say spirituality, something's going to pop into their head that I don't mean.
Yeah.
You know, religion has an organized set of beliefs and practices. It's organized. Alcoholics Anonymous has an organized set. yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous has suggested 12 steps,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a little different, but we can't shy away from God. We can't, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we cannot shy away from God. I've heard a million times if God drives somebody out of the rooms, alcohol will drive him back in.
And I've seen it. I've seen it over and over again.
And if you just want to hang out in the halls in the waiting room in the hospital and not go in for any treatment, you're going to remain sick.
Yeah.
So does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. How to transmit this good news is one of our most challenging problems in communication, for which there may be no fast or sweeping answer. Perhaps our public information services could begin to emphasize this all-important aspect of AA more heavily. And within our own ranks, we might well develop a more sympathetic awareness of the acute plight of these really isolated and desperate sufferers. In their aid, we can settle for no less than the best possible attitude and the most ingenious action that we can muster. In other words, we've got to figure out a way to convince people that waiting in the hallway of the hospital is not what they should be doing.
Yeah.
They need to go in and see the doctor.
Yeah.
So we can also take a fresh look at the problem of no faith as it exists right on our own doorstep. Though 300,000 did recover in the last 25 years, maybe 500,000 more have walked into our midst and then out again. No doubt some were too sick to make even a start. Others couldn't or wouldn't admit their alcoholism. Still others couldn't face up to their underlying personality defects. Numbers departed for still other reasons. Yet we can't well content ourselves with the view that all these recovery failures were entirely the fault of the newcomers themselves. Perhaps a great many didn't receive the kind and amount of sponsorship they so sorely needed. We didn't communicate when we might have done so. So we AAs failed them. Perhaps more often than we think, we still make no contact at depth with those suffering the dilemma of no faith. You know, for a long time, Monty, you know, some of the meetings and some of the groups that I was involved with, I'm talking back in the early 90s, they were not what you would describe as solution-oriented meetings or groups.
Mm-hmm.
They more... You know, they likened themselves more to group therapy without any without any qualified counseling.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like go in and dump.
Yeah.
And the person who dumps with the most amount of style is the guy that has what you want. You know, So that's really kind of the way it was. And then when I discovered the recovery program, the 12-step recovery program, and more so even than discover it, I experienced it when I actually did it. I looked back at a lot of the people that had cycled through these groups, and I saw the groups more to blame for the person's individual failure than I did Alcoholics Anonymous.
Sure.
Because Alcoholics Anonymous is a 12-step program, and the sole purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. And these groups were not teaching and not practicing the 12 steps. They were a free-for-all group therapy session. And so a lot of people who probably were alcoholic and probably could recover didn't, because there was no solution offered, at least a solution, you know, powerful enough to hold them close to anything that would bring about their recovery.
No wonder they were saying it doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
There was
I tried AA. You know, I went in there and everybody was complaining. You know, if I wanted to hear complaining, I'd hang around my family. Yeah.
But if you could be a fly on the wall in that meeting, they were right. That's what they were doing. You know, I've heard people say, "Man, I went to this meeting and I felt more like drinking when I left than when I walked in." And I'm thinking, "Uh-huh, yeah, I get it."
Yeah,
unfortunately,
you know, our friend Chris R. from Ingram, Texas, you know, he has a lot to say about the advent of the discussion meeting.
Mm.
You know, the beginnings of open group discussion.
Yeah.
And he has a lot to say about that. He's done a lot of historical study, and that certainly was an area where the recovery rates got watered way down. You know, when people started to, let's start a meeting where we can just talk about anything we want.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound cool? You know, and the problem is that alcoholics walk into those meetings.
I remember seeing a laminated sheet of paper that said suggested topics for this meeting. And it was up there at where the chairperson sat, right? And there wasn't very many things on there that had anything to do with anything in any of the literature.
Yeah. It really, a lot of crud has creeped in. You know, there is the Big Book revival movement, the Back to Basics movement, whatever you want to call it, has really tried to correct for a lot of that stuff, much to the consternation of the AA people who are more interested in quantity than quality. But I'm grateful to be part of that community, really, really trying to stay focused on, you know, problem solution. You know, let's not talk about your lawnmower. You know, listen, your divorce is an outside issue. Okay. Bring that up with your sponsor. I don't want to hear it in the meeting. And I'm sorry. That's the way I feel.
Yeah.
You know, call me a cranky old timer if you want.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm you're getting me all pumped because next Tuesday show on the Came to Believe Recovery podcast, the topic is what does the Big Book say and what does it not say? And so, you know, and this is one of those movements. It's getting back to let's see what the book says.
Right.
Yeah. I love it.
Right. And then, listen, there's reason for that because from my personal experience, the people that try to apply what's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous into a way of life, those are the people I continue to see over the years.
Yep.
And they continue to improve their lives and the lives of others around them. So it's observable to me. And that's why I'm a big proponent. I it was not observable to me that the group discussion meetings were bringing about anything but tentative sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Anyway, certainly none are more sensitive to spiritual cocksureness, pride, and aggression than they are. I'm sure this is something we too often forget. In AA's first years, I all but ruined the whole undertaking with this sort of unconscious arrogance. God, as I understood him, had to be for everybody. Sometimes my aggression was subtle and sometimes it was crude, but either way it was damaging, perhaps fatally so to numbers of non-believers. Of course, this sort of thing isn't confined to 12-step work. It is very apt to leak out into our relations with everybody. Even now I catch myself chanting that same old barrier-building refrain, do as I do, believe as I do, or else. So he's talking again about humility and meeting the newcomer where they are, with a lack of shame and criticism. Just meet the newcomer where they are and try to create the atmosphere, the environment whereby they can have the same experience you had coming to believe. You know what I mean?
You bet.
Here's a recent example of the high cost of spiritual pride. A very rough-minded prospect was taken to his first AA meeting. The first speaker majored on his own drinking pattern. The prospect seemed impressed. The next two speakers, or maybe lecturers, each themed their talks on God as I understand him. This could have been good too, but it certainly wasn't. The trouble was their attitude, the way they presented their experience. They did ooze arrogance. In fact, the final speaker got so far overboard on some of his personal theological convictions, with perfect fidelity, both were repeating my performance of years before. Quite unspoken yet implicit in everything they said was the same idea. Folks, listen to us. We have the only true brand of AA, and you'd better get it. Mm. The new prospect said he'd had it, and he had. His sponsor protested that this wasn't real AA, but it was too late. Nobody could touch him after that. He also had a first-class alibi for yet another bender. When last heard from, an early appointment with the undertaker seemed probable.
Wow.
Wow, that is bad. Fortunately, such rank aggression in the name of spirituality isn't often seen nowadays. Yet this sorry and unusual episode can be turned to good account. We can ask ourselves whether, in less obvious but nevertheless destructive forms, we are not more subject to fits of spiritual pride than we had supposed. If constantly worked at, I'm sure that no kind of self-survey could be more beneficial. Nothing could more surely increase our communication with each other and with God. Humility is just bursting out at me. And certainly it was a refrain that Bill never stopped, communicating this necessity for humility and distancing from arrogance and conceit.
One of the things that baffles me, it just baffles me, is how we can, many of us people of faith, will perhaps we started out with no faith, and then we had a spiritual experience, and then we had a spiritual awakening, and this marvelous thing happened with me. It was the application of what I already believed to be truth through the 12-step process, and then I woke up, and then to go from that and know in my heart of hearts that what I have been gifted is the most marvelous thing that's ever happened to me, and I want to share it. And then I turn around and share it in a harsh, condemning, judgmental manner that contradicts everything about my own belief system. That baffles me, brother.
You know, one of my teachers, Mark Houston, used to say, don't talk away the experience. So, all of us have had spiritual revelations and spiritual experiences. He said he basically said you can lose it by talking about it. In other words, it's a spiritual experience, and it's going to be difficult to communicate with human language.
Yes,
and sometimes you'll just confuse it all up if you try. So I don't know. That was a lesson he would.
Yeah,
he
that's
would,
good. That's good.
He would teach. Many years ago, a so-called unbeliever brought me to see this very clearly. He was an MD and a fine one. I met him and his wife, Mary, at the home of a friend in a Midwestern city. It was a purely social evening. Our fellowship of alcoholics was my sole topic, and I pretty much monopolized the conversation. Nevertheless, the doctor and his lady seemed truly interested, and he asked many questions. But one of them made me suspect that he was an agnostic, or maybe an atheist. This promptly triggered me, and I set out to convert him. Then and there. Deadly serious, I actually bragged about my spectacular spiritual experience of the year before. The doctor mildly wondered if that experience might not be something other than what I thought it was. This hit me hard, and I was downright rude. There had been no real provocation. The doctor was uniformly courteous, good-humored, and even respectful. Not a little wistfully, he said he often wished he had a firm faith, too. But plainly enough, I'd convinced him of nothing. You know, people would say this stuff to Bill Wilson. You got to understand, he was under the influence of belladonna when he had his white light experience on his bed, Monty.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not taking away that it wasn't a true
legitimate
conversion, legitimate conversion experience. I'm just saying that you could argue otherwise.
Sure.
And I think this doctor was doing that.
They would find it easy to be able to do that if they had no faith. I get it. I would say, why wouldn't you think that?
So 3 years later, I revisited my Midwestern friend. Mary, the doctor's wife, came by for a call, and I learned that he had died the week before. Much affected, she began to speak of him. His was a noted Boston family, and he'd been a Harvard-educated, a brilliant student. He might have gone on to fame in his profession. He could have enjoyed a wealthy practice and social life among old friends. Instead, he insisted on being a company doctor in what was a small town, strife-torn industrial town. When Mary had sometimes asked why they didn't go back to Boston, he would take her hand and say, "Maybe you are right, but I can't bring myself to leave. I think these people at the company really need me." Mary then recalled that she had never known her husband to complain seriously about anything or to criticize anyone bitterly. Though he appeared to be perfectly well, the doctor had slowed down in his last 5 years. When Mary prodded him to go out evenings, he tried to get him to the office on time. He always came up with a plausible and good-natured excuse. Not until his sudden last illness did she know that all the while he had carried about a heart condition that could have done him in at any moment. Except for a single doctor on his own staff, no one had an inkling. When she reproached him about this, he simply said, "Well, I could say no good in causing people to worry about me, especially you, my dear." This was the story of a man of great spiritual worth. The hallmarks were plain to be seen. Humor and patience, gentleness and courage, humility and dedication, unselfishness and love, a demonstration I might never come near in making myself. This was the man I had chided and patronized. This was the unbeliever I had presumed to instruct. Mary told us this story more than 20 years ago. Then, for the first time, it burst upon me how very dead faith can be when minus responsibility. The doctor had an unwavering belief in his ideals, but he also practiced humility, wisdom, and responsibility, hence his superb demonstration. My own spiritual awakening had given me a built-in faith in God, a gift indeed, but I had been neither humble nor wise. Boasting of my faith, I had forgotten my ideals. Pride and irresponsibility had taken their place. By so cutting off my own light, I had little to offer my fellow alcoholics. Therefore, my faith was dead to them. At last, I saw why many had gone astray, some of them forever. Therefore, faith is more than our greatest gift. It's sharing with others our greatest responsibility. So may we of AA continually seek the wisdom and the willingness by which we may well fulfill that immense trust which the giver of all perfect gifts has placed in our hands.
So you know what, Chris? What I'm hearing him say, he's not saying don't share your experience. He's not saying don't share your faith. He's not saying don't share God. What he's saying is it's all in the approach.
Yeah, yeah. Do it with humility. Do it with respect. Do it with common sense, tact and common sense. You know.
Yeah.
But that article really,
that's good.
You know, really gives you an idea of the spiritual work that Bill Wilson did. Remember, he is the number one guy. He has to be the captain of the team. He has to be the first violinist. He has to be the leader of his artillery group. You know he has to make it on Wall Street. He has to hang out with all the movers and shakers, and to see, you know, an essay that so deeply talks about how important his own personal humility is, it really, really, really moved me tonight, that particular essay.
It's powerful. It's powerful. And I'm looking down, not meaning to read ahead, but humility for today is the topic for next week. And I was going to ask the question, with so much emphasis on humility that Bill really drives home over and over and over again, why do so many people think that Bill was such a knucklehead? Well, I think it's because so many people don't read the history. They don't look into this man very deeply, other than whatever they hear in a meeting. And that's too bad. That's unfortunate.
You know, it's common for people want to throw stones at the king, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Take him down a peg or two, and a lot of Akron and Cleveland were about that in the early days. And you know, if somebody's writing a book about AA, a lot of times they just focus on, you know, the white paper stuff, the things that get constant criticism. But I've really, you and I both have really studied Bill Wilson and his works. And I gain respect every day for what he's left us, in his writings, what he's left us.
Yeah. It is more than a gift. It's a privilege to be able to re-give it. This is that one re-gifting that's good and appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, great episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart, Chris. Next week, Humility for Today, written in June 1961. We're getting there. Hey, we're moving right along.
Yeah. What are we, about two-thirds of the way through the book, maybe?
Yep. I got it bookmarked there. That's how much we left, right there. Yeah.
And okay, we'll do the best we can to get through this year.
I'm sure we will. All right, listeners, if you'd like to comment on this show or send us an email, you may do so by typing away at take12radio@comcast.net. Listen to the end of the show here, and you'll learn how you can catch up on all the episodes of Walking Through the Language of the Heart. Chris, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Monty.
You betcha. All right, until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production. Yeah. kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.